we would like to send out a special thanks to the fun and challenging Best Fiends, the infamously impossible-to-put-down puzzle game. Download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Thank you, and enjoy the show. May 1st, 2002. San Francisco, California. After finishing a phone call with one of her sisters, 24-year-old Evelyn Hernandez and her 5-year-old son, Alex Hernandez, vanished without explanation. At the time, Evelyn was only 6 days away from giving birth to her second child, but when she fails to resurface by her due date, she is officially reported missing. Over 3 months later, Evelyn's torso and legs wash up on shore along San Francisco Bay, but neither Alex nor the fetus for Evelyn's unborn son, Fernando, can be found. It turns out that Fernando's biological father is a married man whom Evelyn had been having an affair with, but no evidence is ever found to link anyone to this crime. After that, the trail went cold. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host, Robin Warder, and today we're going to be exploring a cold case involving a mother and a son. The 2002 murder of Evelyn Hernandez and the disappearance of her 5-year-old son, Alex Hernandez. I'm sure many elements of this story will sound very familiar to you. A pregnant woman goes missing in California in 2002 before her remains are found in San Francisco Bay months later. But no, this is not the saga of Lacey and Scott Peterson, though that case would wind up being linked to this one the following year. Evelyn Hernandez was actually an immigrant from El Salvador who was raising her son as a single mother, and at the time she went missing, she was less than 1 week away from giving birth to a second son named Fernando. The father of this child was Herman Aguilera, whom Evelyn had been involved in a relationship with, but it turned out he was actually married to someone else. Now, on the surface, it sounds like there would be good reason to be suspicious of this guy, but unlike Scott Peterson, it does not seem like there is much in the way of evidence against him. And what further complicates this case is that there are two additional victims, Alex, who is still a missing person, and Fernando, who has technically not been confirmed to be dead since his fetus was never found. So today's episode will be a very unique one, as we're simultaneously covering an unsolved murder and missing persons case. And given the numerous similarities between this story and the Lacey Peterson murder, which is one of the most famous crimes of the modern era, we are going to explore the issue of the media's tendency to favor coverage of one case over the other. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the story of Evelyn and Alex Hernandez. Our story begins in San Francisco, California in 2002. One of our central figures is 24-year-old Evelyn Hernandez, who originally hails from El Salvador. Evelyn emigrated to the United States at age 14 to live with her mother, who had previously fled the country during the Salvadoran Civil War. 3 years after her arrival, Evelyn became pregnant and gave birth to her son Alexis, who went by the name Alex. Alex's biological father was enlisted in the Navy at the time, but he would cut ties with Evelyn and did not play any role in his son's life. By this point, Alex is 5 years old, and Evelyn is raising him as a single mother while they live together in an apartment in the Crocker Amazon neighborhood. While Evelyn's mother has since returned to El Salvador, she still has two sisters living in the United States, Reina, who lives in the nearby city of Richmond, and Olivia, who lives on the other side of the country in Virginia. Evelyn has been involved in a relationship with 36-year-old Herman Aguilera, who works as a mechanic for United Airlines at San Francisco International Airport, and is also employed at a limousine company. Evelyn would become pregnant with Herman's child, and has learned that the baby is a boy, whom she is planning to name Fernando. In fact, even though she has previously worked as a vocational nurse, and was employed at the Clift Royal Sonesta Hotel, Evelyn has been forced to stop working and go on disability due to issues with her pregnancy. On May the 1st, 6 days before she was scheduled to give birth to Fernando, Evelyn took Alex to Buena Vista Elementary School, where he was attending preschool. After picking her son up and returning home later that night, Evelyn had a phone conversation with her sister Reina, speaking to her about a baby shower she was planning to attend. The call ended at around 9 p.m., but this would be the last contact Evelyn ever had with her family. The following morning, Alex failed to show up for preschool, and they did not hear anything from Evelyn. On May the 7th, which was Fernando's scheduled due date, Herman Aguilera went to the police and reported Evelyn missing, claiming that he had not heard from her in over a week, even though he had made repeated attempts to contact her and called a number of local hospitals to see if she had given birth. Police performed a search of Evelyn's apartment and found no sign of her or Alex. There was initial speculation that Evelyn may have left the area with her son because she had a dispute with Herman and wanted to have her baby in privacy. However, she did not own a car, and aside from her cell phone, virtually all of her personal belongings had been left behind. Evelyn and Alex's passports were still inside their apartment, as well as a suitcase Evelyn had packed in preparation for her upcoming hospital stay. The investigation turned up no reports of anyone matching Evelyn's description having given birth following her disappearance. The last known paper trail for Evelyn was when she took a bus to a bank in order to make a deposit and use their ATM on May the 1st. That same day, she went to a nearby Ross Dress for Less store and was believed to have purchased a new wallet. Well, 2 weeks after Evelyn was reported missing, this wallet would be found in a fenced-off dirt parking area located on Linden Avenue in South San Francisco and turned over to the police. It contained a disability benefits check made out to Evelyn, as well as $40 in cash. It was believed that Evelyn received this check when she picked up her mail while arriving home on the evening of May the 1st, which is why it was never cashed. The parking area where Evelyn's wallet was found was next to a canal, but a search of it turned up no additional evidence. Interestingly enough, this area was located only 2 blocks away from a location which was connected to Herman Aguilera, though differing sources give conflicting information. Some sources say it was close to the limousine company where Herman worked, while others say it was near a gas station the limo company frequently used. Well, it wasn't long before suspicion started to be directed towards Herman, as it turned out that he was married to another woman, and Evelyn did not even find out about this until she was 4 months pregnant with Fernando. When Evelyn originally told Herman about the pregnancy, he did not seem thrilled about it, so she called Herman's mother to ask if anything was wrong with him. It was here when Evelyn finally learned that Herman was married, but in spite of this, she was still planning to raise Fernando on her own. According to Evelyn's sister Reina, shortly before she went missing, Evelyn had told her that she wanted to end the relationship with Herman because he appeared to have no intention of leaving his wife, though she told him he would be allowed to visit Fernando after he was born. At the time, Herman was still paying for Evelyn's apartment and wanted to be able to stay there, but he did not appear to want to do anything to support Fernando, so Evelyn was considering the possibility of seeking legal action to receive child support. During an interview with the media, Reina described Herman as being quote-unquote unlikable, though she stopped short of accusing him of being responsible for Evelyn and Alex's disappearances. As for Alex's biological father, he was living in Puerto Rico by this point, and was not considered to be a suspect. When questioned by police, Herman claimed that he had last seen Evelyn on April the 30th, the day before she vanished, as he went shopping at IKEA to buy a new bed for Alex before meeting Evelyn at San Francisco General Hospital for a routine prenatal exam. Herman's wife provided him with an alibi, claiming that he came home from work on the evening of May the 1st and was with her the entire night. Herman's wife was aware of his affair with Evelyn and believed he had broken off the relationship, but she did not actually find out that Evelyn was pregnant with Herman's child until the police told her during questioning. Well, on July the 24th, nearly 4 months after Evelyn and Alex originally went missing, a pair of legs, as well as a badly decomposed female torso which was clad in a maternity blouse, washed up on shore at the Embarcadero waterfront beneath the Bay Bridge. The remains appeared to have been floating in San Francisco Bay for months, and there was immediate suspicion that they belonged to Evelyn. A month and a half later, after the victim's DNA was compared to DNA found on a toothbrush in Evelyn's apartment, testing positively confirmed that the remains belonged to her. However, when dive teams performed a search of San Francisco Bay, they failed to find the rest of Evelyn's body, including the fetus of her unborn son Fernando, and there was no trace of Alex either. According to the autopsy report, there was no evidence of sharp or blunt force injuries on Evelyn's remains, and her exact cause of death was listed as undetermined. During the initial stages of the investigation, the case was handled by the San Francisco Police Department's Missing Persons Unit, and Herman was cooperative with them. But after it was handed off to their homicide unit, Herman hired an attorney, refused to provide investigators with a formal statement, and ceased all communication with them. Herman also never spoke with the media, and following the discovery of Evelyn's remains, his attorney simply issued a statement that Herman was, quote-unquote, deeply saddened by the news of the death of his close friend. While police have never ruled out Herman as a suspect, they have never officially named him as a serious suspect either. Anyway, the story would take an interesting turn by the end of the year, when one of the most sensational true crime stories of all time hit California. I'm sure most of you are probably already familiar with this case, but here are the basic details. On Christmas Eve in 2002, 27-year-old Lacey Peterson vanished from her suburban home in the city of Modesto, located about 90 miles east of San Francisco. At the time, Lacey was married to her 30-year-old husband, Scott Peterson, and was 8 months pregnant with her unborn son, Connor. Well, the story instantly became a media sensation, especially once it was discovered that Scott had been conducting a secret affair with a woman named Amber Fry, which helped turn him into the prime suspect in Lacey's disappearance. On April the 13th, 2003, a late-term male fetus was found along the Point Isabel Regional Shoreline in San Francisco Bay, and the following day, the decomposed and decapitated body of a pregnant woman washed up on the same shoreline about a mile away. Within days, DNA testing positively identified the victims as being Lacey and Connor Peterson, and Scott was immediately arrested and charged with their murders. After a long and highly publicized trial the following year, Scott was found guilty and convicted of first-degree murder in Lacey's death and second-degree murder in Connor's death. He was sentenced to death and wound up on death row at San Quentin State Prison, but even though Scott's death sentence was overturned by the Supreme Court of California in August of last year, his conviction was upheld, so he will remain in prison indefinitely. Now, the massive publicity surrounding this case wound up bringing extra attention to Evelyn Hernandez, as there were a number of similarities between her death and the murder of Lacey Peterson, as the remains have both been found in San Francisco Bay, approximately 20 miles apart from each other. Before Scott's trial, his defense team pushed forward the theory that an unknown third party was responsible for murdering both women and made a formal subpoena for all police records from the Hernandez case. However, the San Francisco PD and the city attorney's office filed court papers to reject the subpoena, as they believed that turning over the files to the Peterson defense team could jeopardize an open case. They feared that if certain details went public, it could reveal the identity of witnesses and tip off potential suspects, since the file contained information that only the killer would know. A Superior Court judge ultimately denied the Peterson defense team's request to access the Hernandez file, as he believed that any link between the two cases was, quote-unquote, highly speculative, though the defense was allowed to view Evelyn's autopsy reports. Even though law enforcement does not believe the cases are connected, the media has drawn parallels between them, sometimes referring to Evelyn as the, quote-unquote, other Lacey Peterson. According to Evelyn's sister, Olivia, quote, The police and journalists ignored my sister because she was poor and from El Salvador. She wasn't middle class and married, like Lacey Peterson. End quote. On the one-year anniversary of Evelyn and Alex's disappearances, a memorial service was held at the spot on the Embarcadero where Evelyn's torso was discovered, and it was attended by around 100 people. It was a purification ceremony, which involved singing Spanish songs and burning incense over flowers that were tossed into San Francisco Bay. Over the years, the reward for information in this case has increased to $100,000, but the investigation has remained at a standstill. After nearly two decades, there are still no answers about who was actually responsible for Evelyn's murder, and Alex continues to remain a missing person. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, we would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Best Fiends. We all have our forms of entertainment which are guilty pleasures, whether it be a campy TV show, a cheesy movie, professional wrestling, or maybe even the latest Netflix true crime series. But there is one form of entertainment I feel zero guilt about, and it's Best Fiends. Best Fiends provides me with an endless source of entertainment that I can access on my phone at any time. It's a match 3 puzzle game unlike any other, with literally thousands of levels and new content which is added all the time. I've been playing for a while now, and I guess you could say I'm a little obsessed. No, scratch that. I guess you could say I'm a lot obsessed. While working on true crime is my passion, I need something to help me unwind between researching and recording these episodes, and Best Fiends is an ideal way to de-stress. But once you start playing and beat a new level, that old adrenaline rush returns, particularly when I passed the milestone of beating level 1000 a few months ago. Sound fun? You can download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play and get started. Let me know what you think. With Best Fiends, there's always something new today, and tomorrow, and every day after that. Just don't blame me if you become slightly obsessed. Or a little obsessed. Or a lot obsessed. So once again, download Best Fiends free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of this episode. Now, as I'm sure you're well aware, one of the primary goals of The Trail Went Cold has always been to cover lesser-known cold cases, which is why you would never see us do an episode about something like the Lacey Peterson murder, which has already gotten extensive media coverage and been analyzed to death. However, I'm always on the lookout for lesser-known stories which just happen to have a connection to super-famous cases, and this is a primary example of that. If you do a search for Evelyn Hernandez online, the vast majority of the material you'll find are sources which compare her to Lacey Peterson, and you can definitely understand why. I'm sure most of you are probably familiar with the phrase, missing white woman syndrome, the social phenomenon where the media will focus most of their energy on cases which involve young, attractive white women who hail from middle or upper class backgrounds. In fact, if you browse the Wikipedia page on missing white woman syndrome, you'll find a chart citing numerous examples of it. And of course, one of them is a comparison between Lacey Peterson and Evelyn Hernandez. Now, I will add the disclaimer that technically, Lacey was the child of a Portuguese father and a Caucasian mother, but as a pregnant, middle-class housewife who lived in an upscale suburban neighborhood and was often described as the quote-unquote all-American girl next door, you can see why she would be treated as such a sympathetic victim by the mainstream media. By comparison, Evelyn Hernandez was a Salvadoran immigrant and single mother who did not have a lot of money and had gotten pregnant with a married man. And that's where the most interesting difference between the two cases came in. Scott Peterson practically became America's most hated man once it was uncovered that he was cheating on his pregnant wife with Amber Fry, and the fact that he told Amber his wife was deceased before Lacey even went missing was pretty damning. Technically, Scott and Amber had only been dating for just over a month, whereas Evelyn and Herman Aguilera were having an affair for about a year and she was about to give birth to his child, so their relationship was definitely a lot more serious. However, much like Amber, Evelyn was completely unaware that she was dating a married man, and did not find this out until after she was 4 months pregnant. Evelyn technically didn't do anything wrong, but you can see how the media and the public might be inclined to treat Lacey as the more sympathetic victim. The primary source for most of the media coverage in the Hernandez case was the San Francisco Chronicle, but even they admitted that during the 4 month time period between Lacey's disappearance and Scott's arrest, they published 32 articles about this story, and 4 of them made the front page. By comparison, the Chronicle only published 4 articles in total about Evelyn and Alex's disappearances, and none of them were front page news. The first press conference from police to publicize the Hernandez case did not take place until over 1 month after they originally went missing, and while a $500,000 reward was raised and posted in the Peterson case within a few weeks of Lacey's disappearance, there was no reward offered for information on Evelyn and Alex until 1 year after the fact. At one point, Evelyn's family attempted to get her story featured on America's Most Wanted, but were rejected because there was no active arrest warrant for a suspect. Yet during the same time period, the show ran a segment about Lacey Peterson's disappearance, even though there was not yet an arrest warrant for a suspect in her case at that point. America's Most Wanted did finally do a segment on Evelyn and Alex during the summer of 2003, but of course, this was an entire year after they originally vanished. But while it's easy to criticize the media for favoring one case over the other, you also have to remember that Lacey Peterson's family had a lot more money and resources to spread awareness about her case, and they were always speaking to the press in order to keep Lacey in the spotlight. By contrast, Evelyn's friends and family had nowhere near as many resources at their disposal, and there was no one who could function as her spokesperson. She had 2 sisters in the US, but one of them lived in Virginia, and even though her other sister, Raina, did live in the Bay Area, she could not actually hear or speak, and had to communicate with reporters using sign language and an interpreter. Evelyn herself spoke limited English, and many of her friends only spoke Spanish, so it was very difficult for anyone to be an advocate for her in the media. Ironically enough, it was Herman Aguilera, the person who would later be suspected of causing Evelyn and Alex's disappearances, who officially reported them missing to the police. Now, once Scott Peterson became the prime suspect in his wife's disappearance, every single aspect of his life was investigated and analyzed, but the same cannot be said for Herman. He has never given any interviews to the media, and we only know the most basic details about him, so it's tough to gauge Herman's involvement with such limited information. But of course, the key difference between the Hernandez and Peterson cases is that Evelyn's 5-year-old son Alex disappeared alongside her, and sadly, that poor boy has often been overlooked in this whole saga. While most people involved in this case don't hold out much hope that Alex is still alive, without a body, we can't be 100% certain. And while the fetus for Lacey's unborn son Connor was found in San Francisco Bay, the fetus for Evelyn's unborn son Fernando was not. It's most likely that Fernando did not survive and has simply not been found, but because Evelyn was less than a week away from giving birth, and her torso was not discovered until over 3 months later, we technically cannot say with absolute certainty that she did not give birth to Fernando before she was killed. Now, I know there's been a lot of controversy about Scott Peterson in recent years, as he does have his fair share of supporters who believe he is innocent, and in 2017, the A&E Network released an extensive multi-part documentary series titled The Murder of Lacey Peterson, which attempted to cast doubt on his conviction. Well, I'll state right up front that even though the case against him was circumstantial, I still believe that Scott Peterson is guilty of sin, and the sheer amount of circumstantial evidence against him is far too damning for me to believe he was innocent of his wife and unborn son's murders. And in spite of what his supporters might say, I want to discount the idea that this crime has any connection to the Hernandez case. Even though both victims were found in San Francisco Bay, the Petersons lived 90 miles away in Modesto, though I have considered the possibility that Scott might have intentionally made the decision to drive to Berkeley and dump Lacey's body in the bay in order to give off the false impression that both she and Evelyn were murdered by the same killer. However, the Hernandez case got so little coverage in the media that I doubt that Scott would have even heard of it. I think his defense team kind of lucked into the fact that such a similar crime occurred in the Bay Area earlier that same year, which gave them the opportunity to point the finger at an outside third party. But the problem is that some of Scott's supporters decided to bring an old relic from the 1980s into the mix. Satanic Panic. One of the attorneys on Scott's defense team was Matt Dalton, who was removed from the case prior to trial for violating a judge's order not to speak with the media. He would later publish a book titled Presumed Guilty, which attempted to cast doubt on Scott's conviction, but one of his alternate theories was that Lacey was murdered by a satanic cult from the Berkeley area who had been responsible for the disappearances of 7 pregnant women over a 3-year period. Dalton made mention of Evelyn Hernandez and pointed out that she went missing on the date of May the 1st, which the satanic calendar apparently refers to as the Grand Climax, aka a day of sacrifice. Well, a retired California congressman named William E. Dannemeyer read Presumed Guilty, and in September of 2006, he decided to send a letter to the California Attorney General stating, quote, "Both Lacey and Evelyn disappeared on satanic holy days, according to the satanic calendar, and they both ended up in the San Francisco Bay with their hands, feet, and heads missing. I began to read everything I could about Satanism, satanic cults, and ritual abuse. With this mountain of evidence not used at the trial, evidence that would have cleared Scott Peterson, why was it not used?" End quote. Okay, I don't think it's going to come as a complete shock for you to hear me say this, but no, I do not believe a satanic cult was responsible for the murder of Evelyn Hernandez, and I certainly don't believe they killed Lacey Peterson. But on the other side of the coin, I do not believe Scott Peterson was responsible for killing Evelyn, even though I have seen that pushed forward as a potential theory. After Scott was charged with his wife's murder, I know attempts were made to paint him as a remorseless serial killer and link him to other unsolved cold cases from California. For instance, you might be familiar with the disappearance of 19-year-old Kristen Smart, who vanished from the campus of California Polytechnic State University in May of 1996. It turned out that Scott just happened to be a student at the same university during that time period, but even though rumors briefly spread that he might have had some connection to Kristen's disappearance, that case already has another promising suspect named Paul Flores, so the whole thing is nothing more than a coincidence. Since Scott lived in Modesto, there is nothing at all to link him to Evelyn Hernandez, or suggest he was in San Francisco in May of 2002 when she went missing. So again, it's likely just a coincidence that 2 murdered pregnant women were dumped in San Francisco Bay during that particular year. So I think we can now officially close the books on the Hernandez-Peterson connections and start focusing on what really happened to Evelyn, Alex, and Fernando. On the surface, the explanation might seem pretty obvious. We have a woman that became pregnant with the child of a married man who was not overly thrilled about the whole situation, and she reportedly told him that she wanted to end the relationship a short time before she disappeared. However, Herman Aguilera has never been formally named as a suspect, so unlike Scott Peterson, it doesn't sound like there's much in the way of actual evidence against him at all. And obviously, the murder of a woman, a 5-year-old boy, and an unborn child is an incredibly monstrous act, yet we know so little about Herman's background that it's difficult to ascertain if he would have been capable of something like that. But here's what we know about the timeline. The last time Evelyn was confirmed to be alive was at around 9 p.m. on the evening of May 1st, when she finished a phone conversation with her sister. Even though she was not reported missing until 6 days later, the first sign that something was wrong was when Evelyn failed to drop off Alex at preschool on the morning of May 2nd. For this reason, investigators believe that something happened to both of them during a window of approximately 9 or 10 hours. Another key clue is the disability check that was inside Evelyn's wallet when it was found later that month. Evelyn did not receive that check until she picked up her mail on the evening of May 1st, so it's reasonable to assume that if she had been alive for any length of time on May the 2nd, she would have deposited it. Since the check and $40 in cash were left in Evelyn's wallet, that would seem to indicate that robbery was not the motive for what happened to her, but it makes you wonder why the wallet was found in that particular parking area. Like I mentioned earlier, There are differing sources which state this location was 2 blocks away from either the limousine company where Herman worked, or a gas station this company often frequented, but of course, that's hardly conclusive evidence that Herman was involved. But it makes you wonder if Evelyn's wallet was intentionally planted in that parking area, or if she just happened to drop it there when something happened to her. Now, I've been critical of the media coverage of this case, but the original police investigation wasn't handled much better, since they initially went under the assumption that Evelyn had left on her own to give birth to her child in privacy because she recently had a fight with Herman. Of course, that assumption was completely ridiculous, since all of Evelyn's personal belongings, including a suitcase she had packed for her upcoming hospital stay, were left behind, and she did not even own a car. So where exactly was she planning to go to give birth, and how would she get there? It's also unfortunate that Evelyn and Alex had not been seen for 6 days before they were reported missing, so crucial time and evidence may have been lost. Since Evelyn was on disability and not working at this time, she did not have a job to show up for, which might explain why no one really noticed she was missing. It is a bit weird that during her final phone call with her sister, Evelyn mentioned a baby shower she was planning to attend, but who was holding the shower, and when was it supposed to take place? If the shower happened sometime between May the 2nd and the 7th, did no one become concerned when she didn't show up? Of course, Herman reported Evelyn missing on the 7th, which makes sense, since this was her due date, and he claimed he had no luck getting in touch with her. If Herman was involved in what happened, I'm sure he realized that it would look awfully suspicious if he didn't make any attempt to find Evelyn on the day she was scheduled to give birth to their son. Herman claimed that he last saw Evelyn on April the 30th, when they met at the hospital for a prenatal exam. Even though Evelyn's sister Raina said that Evelyn was ending her relationship with Herman, she apparently told him she would still allow him to have visitation with Fernando, so I could see why Herman would attend this appointment, even if things were not great between them. But it sounds like Herman was supporting Evelyn financially, and she was going to seek additional child support payments from him, so this could definitely be a potential motive for him to want to get rid of her. However, it sounds like the biggest stumbling block against making any sort of case against Herman is that his wife provided him with an alibi, maintaining that he came home from work on the evening of May 1st and spent the entire night with her. Now, of course, since Evelyn and Alex were not reported missing for 6 more days, this does not clear Herman, but once again, since Alex did not show up for preschool the following morning, investigators seem to believe that the disappearances had to occur during a window of time when Herman's whereabouts are accounted for. Of course, you could easily assume that Herman's wife lied to police and fabricated an alibi in order to protect him, but the problem is that we know virtually nothing about her, not even her name. We know that when Amber Fry learned about Lacey Peterson's disappearance, she showed no hesitation about being transparent and coming forward to share everything about her affair with Scott. By the sound of things, Herman's wife did find out about his affair with Evelyn, and he had assured her he was ending it, but she had no idea that Evelyn was pregnant with Herman's child until she was questioned by police. If she had been lying for Herman in order to cover for him, you would think that revelation might have been the turning point, which prompted her to come clean and admit the alibi was false, but it sounds like she would continue to stand by him. We really don't know anything about the circumstances of their marriage, so I have no idea what kind of person Herman's wife was, or if she would be willing to be complicit in a crime. Hell, for all we know, Evelyn and Alex's disappearances could have been her idea to begin with, but without any more details, that's nothing but brash speculation. If Herman's wife already knew about his affair with Evelyn, then there would be no reason for Herman to kill Evelyn in order to cover the whole thing up. But if she was legitimately unaware of Evelyn's pregnancy, that might have given him the motivation to take the extra step to get rid of her, and Alex could have been nothing more than collateral damage. I guess one of the major issues is that most of the information we know about Evelyn and Herman's relationship was delivered secondhand by Raina, and since Herman has elected not to speak with the media and is no longer talking to the police, we can't really hear his side of the story. I have no idea what Herman has been up to for these past 2 decades, or if he's even still married to his wife. But are there other alternate scenarios which don't involve Herman being the perpetrator? Well, with the limited information we have, that's certainly possible. Another theory is that Evelyn could have been the victim of a fetal abduction. As horrifying as that whole concept is, there are documented cases of pregnant women being murdered and having their unborn fetus forcibly extracted from their body through a crude cesarean section. In some of these cases, the perpetrator was a woman who wanted a child and actually went to the trouble of committing murder in order to steal another woman's fetus to pass off as their own. Of course, there's no evidence that this is what happened to Evelyn, but since the fetus of her unborn son Fernando was never found, I guess you can't completely discount the possibility. However, it's worth mentioning that there were no signs of noticeable injuries found on Evelyn's torso, and while the exact cause of her death was never determined, it sounds like investigators have leaned towards the idea that her body came apart in San Francisco Bay because of decomposition, not because she had been cut up and decapitated. As much as I would like to believe that Fernando was removed from Evelyn's body before she died, and that he's out there living his life somewhere under a new identity, I do think the most likely explanation is that his fetus was separated from his mother's torso by a decomposition and is still out there in the water somewhere. While investigators have never disclosed much about the condition of Evelyn's apartment after she disappeared, they haven't mentioned there being any signs of forced entry, struggle, or foul play. So I have to wonder if Evelyn and Alex left their apartment voluntarily before something happened. Even though most of their personal belongings were left behind, Evelyn's wallet was discovered in a parking area, and her cell phone has never been found, and those are two items she likely would have had on her if she stepped out. It's worth noting that Alex's preschool, Buena Vista Elementary School, is located just over 3 miles from the Crocker Amazon District, but since Evelyn did not own a vehicle, it would have taken her over an hour to walk there. So I get the impression that Evelyn usually took the bus in order to drop off Alex at school, but what if someone showed up at their place during the early morning hours of May the 2nd and offered them a ride? And then instead of driving them to school, the perpetrator took Evelyn and Alex to another location to harm them. If that's what happened, then it seems a lot more likely that they would have accepted a ride from someone they knew. However, like I've said numerous times already, certain details about this case are just too vague in order to come up with a concrete theory that implicates Herman or anyone else as being responsible for this. Now, since Alex is technically still a missing person, I'd like to hold out hope that maybe he was sold, given away, or raised by someone else. Given the circumstances, he theoretically could have been smuggled across the border into Mexico, which is why it's been so hard to track him down. But until evidence emerges that he's still alive somewhere, sadly, I think it's most likely that his body was also disposed of in San Francisco Bay and has just never been found. But if either of Evelyn's children survived, Alex and Fernando were currently be 24 and 18 years old, respectively. Whatever happened, this is a horribly tragic story in which there are no less than 3 victims, and it would be nice to get a resolution at some point. So if you happen to have any information on the murder of Evelyn Hernandez or the disappearance of Alex Hernandez, please contact the San Francisco Police Department at 413-553-1071. That's 413-553-1071. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I did something a little different from the norm by releasing an episode about a case which has been solved, the murder-suicide of the Benoit family. You probably know that I'm a lifelong professional wrestling fan, and Chris Benoit's decision to murder his wife Nancy and 7-year-old son Daniel before taking his own life has always haunted me, so I decided to put together an episode in which I detailed this horrible crime and shared my personal thoughts on it. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I have also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I'd also like to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Liam P., Haley R., Amy H., and Lisa D. Thank you all so much for your support. And before I bring this episode to a close, I'd like to play a promo for an all-new podcast about the Zodiac Killer. Have a listen.
I'm Mike Morford, and I've been researching the Zodiac case for years. Zodiac, just the name. It sounds sinister. It inspires fear. The fact that a serial killer would give himself this moniker is disturbing. He would go on to taunt police by sending letters and codes to newspapers for years. And the attacks, they were something else altogether. If you were a young couple in a secluded area, you could easily be a target. And it wasn't just shootings on dark lovers' lanes. Zodiac would even attack with a knife in broad daylight while wearing an executioner-style hood. After a while, Zodiac changed tactics, and even lone cab drivers weren't safe. The Zodiac Killer terrorized the San Francisco Bay Area and then vanished. But he left a lot of clues behind along the way. Clues that we're going to examine closely on the new podcast, Zodiac Speaking. New episodes of Zodiac Speaking come out every other Saturday starting March 13, 2021. Subscribe today wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode.
I'd also like to mention that later this year, provided that it becomes safe to travel again, The Trail Went Cold is going to be appearing on Podcast Row at the very first CrimeCon UK, which is being held at the Leonardo Royal Hotel and Spa in London. I had previously stated that CrimeCon UK was set to take place on the weekend of June 12th and the 13th, but due to certain restrictions, they have now elected to postpone it until the weekend of September the 25th and 26th, so fingers crossed that it will still happen as planned. If you would like to purchase tickets to either event, we have a special promo code you can use to get a 10% discount, and it applies to both the Austin and London events. So to receive 10% off, either visit crimecon.com or crimecon.co.uk and enter the promo code COLD21. That's COLD21. In addition, I also wanted to provide another reminder that I hold live streaming sessions on a platform called Get Vocal. Every Thursday night from 7 until 8 p.m. Eastern Time, I host what is essentially an after show for each week's podcast episode, where I have an interactive discussion about the featured case from said episode and answer questions and address comments from listeners. I always include a link to these sessions in our show notes, so be sure to check there for more information or visit getvocal.com. That's GETVOKL.com. I just wanted to give another shout out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week, and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm going to go to the next one.